Barbara actually didn't have to be there. The next agenda item is the February 28th minutes. There is no understanding. Be clear to everybody, we're doing the schedule. We are meeting next Wednesday, March 6th. That we are off for a week, meeting again on March 20th. All the way to everybody is great. We're breaking the following. So we are scheduled for meeting on March 20th.
The law school is 1 through 5.
Yes, that's the
undergraduate.
Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah. So we're going to be meeting March 6th, March 20th, April 10th. And then we're going to shift to Tuesdays for our last meeting, April 16th. Yes.
Considering this is a chance that we may start popping at the meeting or two, so being aware of that happened.
And we might have to use the meeting. Now those are minutes. All of those are moving from today. I'll be waiting for the answer. Even if you want to know when the official meeting. One of the reasons we're meeting on March 6th. All right. That's the next item on the agenda. UHRD copy questions. I know there were a couple of questions we were still reviewing. I looked at the very agenda packet, which shows the amendments we made. Any comments or questions? Any comments or questions? All
right. I think those are really, I think 1 through 5 really, really fixed. I think 1 through 6 and 7 and 8 are just at all. I think I'll be really stuck later on.
So with that, from my notes in the meeting, we fully removed question 9. And we significantly altered question 12, removed question 13. I don't believe it came to the whether or not we felt C. Which would be cool.
I think it was arguable that there or not, whatever. Yeah, I think it's trying to do processes as well as, okay, so what is it called, rules, environment, say. I think I personally, not entirely, because I don't know horribly strongly one way or the other. I think it's a fine question. I don't know. Some people may not have contact yet with the building, but some people might, and you would have. They also have some other comments to talk about.
Are there any other comments from here? So. Yeah, I think the concerning complaint we heard about it is that it's still putting one office into that corner, very specifically. So I think questions 12A and 12B are stronger. And I think question C again recognize that with either individual charge, not individual error, right?
As it's going to work now, I consider the question C not yet officially in the questions. I just talked to the government to be the program. Yeah.
Okay. Do you
want to move on to question 12? Any other comments?
I like to see, I totally respect the office and sure if you want to really well take into consideration. I just feel like I think this tells a lot for the rights of those who are responding in these situations. I think, you know, when the OJA are professionals, but the advisors typically aren't at the lowest levels, but at higher levels, we get more intense and we get more experienced board members. I think this question shows for those who are just trying to join the board, I think they would respond in a way that would be really telling to the committee who selects. But I completely understand. I mean, if there's a way to reword that question in which we can still get the same type of thought process out of it, I think that's really great. But I think a question like that should be maintained in the longer application.
I agree with Bill. I think there is a way to have concerns about cardboard and the way to make it so small. As an advocate, that's a real performance for not an individual, but that's one of the expense for an advocate. That could be brought up with the language. The other question that I was, based on our discussion about question 9, which was triggered at our last meeting, and almost in my experience with the that's not one question that I generally used to get out of people that respond and elicit it. You generally listen to their lines of how they saw discipline, how they saw the impact on people, and how the process worked writ large. And because I wanted to offer a potential little alternative question that I think might simply elicit a similar response and a similar, hopefully, level of clarity and insight into the soft process of avoidance of the concern of the question 9. In essence, the question would read something along the lines of, how do you believe going through the discipline process at Cornell affects an individual's experience at Cornell? As I'm trying to really just get at the, how do you see what happens when there's an individual going through this, how do they get affected? It's more neutrally, that's trying to not say someone is accused or responding, just trying to see, going through the process, from whatever point of view the applicant chooses to go with, the thought process in there, trying to see how they see it. I think that would be informative and that would be great.
I don't mind that, but I think that we always talk about it, right? Like, so how do you think that's a concept, and how do you think that that's a response, right? But I think we need to have both. But if people are stuck in the hearing, what's to think that the only job is to make sure we're going to have to do that, they're missing the most important part of the job is their role is to prepare to die and to take part in presentation. Like, that's the only part. We're asking for the study board, they need to understand that they're finding people responsible and not responsible, but they have to. Yeah, or something else to think about. When you're hearing a case, you have to be able to still be in contact with students and the office to pay back to the decisions on how to do it.
And I, part of the reason I mean, you want to tweet my name, I think that's fine. The reason I don't want to completely mention complaint or respondents to other questions, we mentioned that this is repeating people's response. And I think that the concern is this is, if we're trying to balance, oh, something horrible happens to a complainant, in essence, that is built in almost a tip with more relevant information. The first thing you need to establish is the individual who is the respondent, did they do this action? And in essence, are in the university where they complained able to satisfy their burden of proof? And after that, then it comes into holistic evaluation. Okay, we believe John Doe or Jane Doe did X. How does that impact on the respondent? How does that affect the community? That kid was more sanctioning. I think it's important to look at the hearing boards that are also in charge of sanctioning. But I also I don't want to pre-prime someone, start getting them down to the path of response, especially because offer a question to find her.
But you can lay out who participates in the process, you can still ask the question, how does this work? And you're not saying how does it impact one or the other, you're saying for everyone involved, how does it impact
I think we'll do with that during the case.
Yeah, I think maybe a question open-ended as to what the offense is. It really takes all the light of it. But I was thinking, there are broader issues. There are broader issues of that in any of these questions. Between the notion of justice to individuals and the effect of a decision enforcing the ruling on the campus as a whole. And that kind of question, I think, is important. And it's sort of offense-free in the sense of doesn't matter what the offense is, but it does get at how whoever's answering the question balances in judgment those things. So that I would lean that way rather than the way that.
And this part of the question for the committee is, how is this asking something different question? Because question 8 is about what purpose it is for its play, and the purpose of its play is to have an effect on students. And to read conclusion, but also, if our boards play a role in affecting students, campus and the way they react. Someone else, I do think the committee was under the understanding that even though we could answer two on this question, there were too many questions. We don't want to hurt the question. Short answer.
I have to say, I think 8 could work. If you just 8 could be. Actually, what we're trying, what Matt is trying to say, and what Michelle is also trying to say, is how you scream your own words, but the words are in the role that they play in the judicial system and campus as a whole. Because then you say, what is the aftermath? What is the proactivity of this? What is, you kind of ask for that, where do you see this process taking in that Cornell from your experience, the experience of others, whether you be faculty member of the graduate system? I'm not sure what we're trying to accomplish here.
I think that could be done by the team, but the statement, like which I was saying, there are individual judicial boards who are in place in the who are adjudicating the system. And we are all expecting to ask the question in their own.
Remember last week we voted to draft 9 because of the potential like, issues with incentivizing people. So what about like getting into state points of the faculty? Like what if any like experiences will make you a more conscientious board member?
There's a second on the inclusion of the question. Let's go into the discussion of including that question. The comments on the inclusion of the question, what if you make you a more.
Yeah, I think that parallel to the
all those in favor of
add a sentence that if these were in, if these three things were in conflict, two or more things were in conflict, what fundamental how would you make your decision? Because otherwise you just have to read them to assume that it was safe. So after an afternoon, then the following sentence would be, if two or more of these considerations, I guess that's what I mean, considerations were in conflict or in tension with one another, how you reach a decision.
Anybody else
want to
support? Not to move this question. So, does anybody else have any feelings on the DW question about when the university?
It's not a separate question. It's a question. It's a sentence.
Yeah. That's a question about the conflict between what the board is called, the building by your faculty member.
I think I understand what you're going to have to try and do. You know, and what you're interested in. You know, that makes me understand it. But I have doubts about whether an applicant would be, if the more philosophical question. So I think it would be more difficult to answer. I think we should just leave it to you. Even if I think that's something.
So I would draw my.
So right now I have the question. Please describe in your own words the university and their influence are, the role they play in Cornell's judicial system, and their effect on the campus. I will just say, I think a lot of this, and this is almost forever, we go through the hearing room, but we go through it, we get some, we see more questions. Get really good responses. See that some questions get really bad responses. That's also why last year we added to the team to allow people to get the best of their responses. And I would almost say that at the end of the year, whenever we form our selection subcommittee, we should almost have them create something in writing such that next year's UAC has almost such a note because people do turn over and graduate. Just so that we can have that so that next year's UAC, okay, question, whatever, and a lot of really good responses. So if a committee is debating, we'll have to keep a cut something, we need to have some records back. So that I think I'd move to help with that. Exactly. We're ready to send you in the list. I think we can now move into question 12. Sean, before you arrive, you were debating whether or not one may have to see. So we'll probably ask you. So this one in question 12C, whether or not it's appropriate in the application question to apply that one of the institutions that supports individuals through the official process is the student that is going to make mistakes. I asked him the question of possible and possible. Appropriate to assume.
You know, I'm going to amend to see as to the rate. Okay. And so, get rid of an advisor. Violation to say a person's statement during the stop is not actually error.
Why is that continuing? It's because it's not formally added. But
oh, it's coming.
Sorry.
Sorry,
appreciate that, but it's
actually the problem.
You just like that. But I mean, I'm not going to die.
Could it also be possible that like UHR member makes those a single mistake, like say the chairman taking a member of the panel, like that was possibly a mistake. They confirm it that way as well.
So you were trying to have the chair very much.
So I think it's important to add. I think we're never going to get to a good place where it doesn't feel, but also like, I feel like, because I would be really, like I'm thinking myself as a respondent. There is a procedural error in my case that really changed the outcome in some way. I would be pretty peeved off now to go through the appeal process on the paper rail, or I'd rather have that clutter. early, so I feel like asking that question is very fair.
With the hearing procedure, we do that chair. So we have to ask with the chair. So, I know it's only a question, or well, it is a good question. I don't know what to do.
I think that's a good question. But again, B versus C, and that's that's on the other side. I think the other point in the show, really, there's a certain point where you're on the hearing boards, apparently you're reappointed relatively when you apply. If you're a layman and you're applying to this, you're a student on the Euro, John Doe, Jane Doe, whoever is applying, I think the question is pointed more at thought process, because I frankly, I mean, if they knew all the history, who makes the rulings and preparing all the details that we know from this committee, I mean, I'd be very impressed. I expect so many people do know that there's a certain point where we need to go through that level of detail, because our applicants are people who would have that level almost always when I have a little context.
With that, like, see, I couldn't figure out how you as a board member would know there was a recognized procedure. If you're advising the advisor to the respondent, I mean, it's such an unlikely case that the board member would have this knowledge and trust their own back to people. In other words, it brings up a situation that I really unlikely. So unlikely that it's hard for the person responding to the decision. Perhaps not, but I find it
better. Well, I would drop it. I mean,
I mean,
sub-part C, right?
Yeah, sub-part C. I would drop it. It's just an unrealistic scenario.
With that, is there anybody who would like to move to formulate food C, which is not current? That will consider C and never having been handed to an application. At this point in time, are there any other amendments coming to the application? Okay, just in terms of timing, assuming this is all very with the evidence, it seems like we might go back to the process. Are we able to do this out? Yeah, I'm not the exact number of but the director of the Office of the Assembly will be returning on Monday, and she will receive the prepare all the application form on sometime within Monday, but next Wednesday we have to look over the actual document application. With that, the application will go out by the end. The application to the discussion we had with the Office of Assembly, with the media appreciation on this week or next week. We'd actually have the applications during the end of the spring break, because the office will not be in break. You know, last week we had a debate about whether or not the project was like that Friday or action break, but for most students, it's it actually might give them more time to get during the break. But they don't think it's going to be the they'll be due at the beginning of that week, all the those of us who are students are on break in the office for the preparing and optimization of the applications. Those who sign up at the meetings in March, as we review those, will have an opportunity to get access to some of the online application before we return to the spring break.
There's one amendment. I mean, historically, in the past, these applicants are for a year, so they didn't send that a little bit right here. And I would also say, simply like, very clear to the office that when time comes to after the application, or key, whatever you may call it, that you don't expect that to be up. Excuse me.
I believe you actually worked on the calendar that I need to do with the office. Is it a date set where once the committee has reviewed all of the applications, that was a
committee reserves the right to do interviews and other things, such that if we ask for, okay, we've done our, again, for our internal satisfaction, we have ranked them anonymously, we'll create a rank list, what's the point, okay, that is what scale, 10, 9 to 10, no problem, people are in 5 through 6, whatever, depending on who we have, we might say, okay, we want to talk to the people and follow up, that's why you need to be anonymous, and you know, we have a real little pay them.
So we can discuss that at our next meeting. Are there any other ideas that you think would like to submit to the office of the assembly when we submit the application?
Yeah.
With that, can I just get a formal motion to approve the application request?
Move.
All of those in favor of the application request? All those opposed? 5-0-1. The application questions have been approved. After the meeting, I will send out the questions with the event today. I will share them with the office.
Thank you for working with us.
Okay, second
that. With that, the next item on our agenda was reviewing substantive amendments in the reorganized code. We recommend informally to the UA after Tuesday meeting so they can begin reviewing the changes that will actually be something.
So, very active. So, I'd like to provide an update on the process. And then also, I have technically all the house.
Yes.
And this is only some of the substantive changes that are in draft. We can talk about them. Not probably the I just went out. So, I told some members that I've been to. I met last week before I had sick with the Secretary's administration. Chiefly, I met Danny. University Council, as well as staff, to talk about the code revisions and our current progress. They were very much on board in the same things with us. They were very supportive of the idea that we organize, you simplify, don't reinvent the wheel, completely review as much aside from public changes that now we've recommended about harassment, even soft essence of changes that were recommended by our working group for the task force. They were very supportive of that. That's important as usual, and they think that they agree with us. Timeline is feasible, they're making progress. They asked that when we give a more finalized draft, we'll get it with us. Give more requests. It comes off as often as some versions go through it. They said, in terms of public comment, as long as we make what they think will agree with us, that as long as we make clear, substantive changes are primarily regarding harassment and such that were recommended by working with task force and had a lot. Kind of last year, that the rest is really simplification of organization. It is nothing really, no major change outside of what we're listening to. But we'll be able to get this done by the end of the semester. I also answered two questions that were raised early in the semester, earlier, which I think I was on the meeting on February 6th. One being, what would become of Title IV? For those who aren't aware, Title IV is the regulation of the border. It is wage work is required by your state law. However, after talking with counsel's office, they're of the opinion that, in essence, in having pre-consulted jurisdiction law, we are able to, in essence, suspend the Title IV entirely, merge defensive versions back into the rest of the code, and then, in essence, that both then counsel's office and more or less in board to make sure that we are in legal compliance, but that the code has enough in it, and as long as we're not carving huge chunks out, you don't necessarily need to have a separate test for any longer. They also said that, in practical matter, code runs both the president and council office them anyways. So there's no way that the president and council office would approve something else, but they thought the plans anyways. Having a formal section of board approval, not something that they say, knowing that we need to work out the exact language there. I brought their attention that, in terms of one of the president's requests, was having a comply with the order, a reasonable order of university officials with those lines currently exists in Title IV. I brought forward that the committee has an opinion that we're not going to expand it, we're not going to narrow it, we're just retaining its current silos related to public order. They were understanding of that generally, and we're not overly concerned about it as long as we didn't get rid of it. So that's where we're moving on that. There also was a question about what is the definition of work related for faculty and staff. They were of the opinion that there are, in essence, there are the cases in
cases where it would be obvious or some of the skills from the campus store. Well, that's those are the fringe cases where coaches would say, not your job to do that. And then the closer you get to, okay, so the program will exactly see that. And the idea was that current process have some way where it has to almost have some way of process adjudicating case by case because there's so much that goes in there in terms of the reasons that you have. It's a protest, less protected conduct, and that, frankly, that falls much closer to being in regard to your status as a student staff member, and therefore, modifying that procedure or area, but not necessarily having a bias in those. That's the reason the fringe cases allow for flexibility of case by case basis. That was an area we touched on, and touched on that a little bit on. And also, in terms of one other talk, that's about another other thing that requested. I don't know my notes in front of me, but I can hold it. But one thing that was brought up was how do we address faculty and staff being in the code? Our working group recommended the code expansion be expanded, scope, creating a Cornell code of conduct, and Kansas code of conduct. In our meeting on the 5th, talk about a little bit in terms of keeping the distances and aspiration documents, values, keeping everyone in it, making sure the procedures are clear that, frankly, your status in the university matters when it comes to these things, similar to what Trace mentioned. The administration is on board with that, in a way to understand that we can't, there's something that the balancing act there, which is heartening because, as I said in the beginning, they expressed the way it's flexible with us. That meeting further reiterated that thing they requested, I raised where we were and they were understanding. To be honest, they really want to get this through as we, and I think that is really helping us move along. When I sent out, and so that's the recap of the meeting, after talking more detail now or offline, folks make notes exactly what we talked about. When I sent out to the members, Mr. In essence, in terms of substantive changes, this is the one of their some I will for you. You cannot get it please.
Also, this is the guy. I was really looking at this.
I apologize. I made my mistake. Wow. Okay. Well, that was me. Well,
to take a step back, how are we going to get confirmation that the board of trustees is okay with us making these changes to Title IV? So, concerning Title IV,
yes,
you said it implied that
yes.
The university would probably be okay making the changes, but really change the approval process, but we yes. Still will need approval.
Correct. So the total timeline for this, there's the last board meeting of the second year is the end of May. So this is the total time wrap. This will be passed sometime prior to the last UA meeting, early in May. Presumably, assuming that the university administration and we are on the same page, which is my sincere hope, and I think believe that we'll be put on our collaborative working last year, that we'll be on the same page, and in which case, council's office and the administration would recommend the board sign off on it. Obviously, the board.
So, what did council's office recommend?
That is, practically speaking, I don't think it's terribly likely. If that happens, well, then we would, as a settle board, have a board like to continue this separately. Again, that's who we will, when we get closer to that final language, I'll sit down with them and just say, I personally would be surprised if they did that. But again, that's something that we will raise when we break the break from their plan to make sure that we will be. Perhaps we can talk to the executive in the wording. It's not like we're just putting this on the board and then have it talked out for them.
But just from a logistical standpoint, I think it would be comforting to get that pre-approval from the executive.
change, which we don't have to make.
I can say, being the board meetings, that generally things like things that are pre-vetted such that can rough the vote is fine. However, there are numerous debates where things can be changed. So when we close with language, like when I'll solve this, we will keep whatever requisite comfort or other information.
Sure. Oh, wait, so you're done.
I believe we are.
Well, then hopefully the language regarding that I email went out to everyone.
But
my phone wouldn't have.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
Okay, again, real quick.
Yeah, this doesn't include the use.
So, what you have, in essence, these are the four provisions proposed by the working group. They're pulled right from the working group report. The definitions align very much similar to those proposed by the Presidential Task Force Subcommittee, the regulations of hate speech harassment. They are also similar to the provisions in Title IX and similar to New York State law, where New York State law speaks on the matter. So in essence, the change of harassment expanded it such that the, again, based more on what was the definition, hostile environment harassment is based on certain characteristics, and the gap relatively long list. And that's even updated as so that multiple areas was this at the time that added sense. Stalking, right now stalking is attacking on provision, it's mentioned harassment and stalking. This case we broke stalking out and given definition of line with your state. Rules on it. And then also to make it absolutely clear that racially or race status motivated assault is not acceptable form. In essence, it should add secondary offense for assaulting someone on the basis of status.
Michelle?
So I think that and then what does it mean when you talk about an individual and a group of individuals?
I dare say that in recent, this is what we're always working for, I didn't do it in general. So in essence, we're talking about the idea, with my understanding of this was a group of individuals, a group of people, in essence, that the idea that it could be a small group or a discrete group of people, in essence, you know, they have a shared characteristic, they are being targeted. Obviously, that's the question of fact and hearing more than is this group insular and discrete enough to be considered that? But I didn't want to be the idea that, well, in theory, if a group of five people and this one person is walking around each person in a round robin to make an argument, would that be considered or it's potentially an issue?
So just, I mean, I guess it's just not to be all the to me, the issue that raises that is a group of persons, they all have to figure something to so I would recommend just keeping it as an individual because individual letter I actually said there's actually no itself is endangerment but it's not itself. So I would actually just solve that everything after the word person. And the provision for the
a small thing, but in part two, it has that long list. I'd add for a different belief.
First, I'm going to believe, I didn't actually put some comments on that box, based on point people are raised, and that was one where I thought, it's a magnitude. On Michelle's question about the individual assistant, my understanding of why it was coming out, and I'm not sure that, but that is that on the one hand, which I got up, and I made some statements that we have offensive, not only can we, but actually be perceived as community. But that wouldn't be on the other hand, we wanted to include that the transparency against not just.
Thank you.
Sorry, my question is also from Michelle. I'm wondering if there's other time that we can do other than that. Because I feel like we're not going to talk about the people that are associated with this, like the actual people that are violated.
Yeah,
it's not clear that where I'm coming in so fundamentally information absent legal delaying factors and things of substantial tension, explicit organizing and imposed, such bias include acts of violence, including sexual violence, violation of by bias based on strategy, academic preference, or any other suspect in various category, any other violence that threatens substances, threatens the university of education property. It definitely has been drafted, we're trying to clean it out. It's there.
Is something that, you know, institutions can choose if they want to actually be subject to bullying. And that could be a violation because whereas who is actually more specific. And here are the protected statuses that we're particularly concerned about. It's more specific in terms of, you know, making those statements. In some ways, you could say, well, why do you need D if you've got C?
Yeah.
But I think that it's also, and actually, Michelle, I'm really going to say this about actually an educational aspect of the code, too. But I do think that it matters to people when they need D to know that there is, you know, that the code is actually best if people have in this way. Plus, it also goes, it's kind of a, let's say, redundancy in certain aspects of it. But the specificity, it's really important for people to see that the code pays attention to this, but also pays attention more broadly to how people are dealt with. That's my understanding.
So, could you
just if it all happened, instead of doing charge, then we vote because they say the line was just seen as a free person. So if we were having these in charge,
I think recent point we don't have. I think it's part of the new list. We don't like regular harassment. We also really don't like harassment based on subject categories. I think it's almost similar to the idea that assault is bad, assault based on a different characteristic of the person, so bad. And on that, actually, I should clarify, the assault based on Craig's status, that chain is actually the change that already no change updated the list of protected statuses because the current list is old in code. That's the change. And to Michelle's point, actually, the code right now in essence, it's quote unquote generic assault provision, is something with endangerment that says the threat or uses with force violence, endangerment or abuse, intimidation or coercion of the person in the rest of the draft that's broken out. Make it more clear that that's generic assault above nearby to assault based on somebody's status, because I think Michelle's point is it's way very makes it completely clear that. That is a functional admission assault, but assault to which you regard that there, we'll be addressing that. It's not as involved in the code.
Why there is something that makes it not responsible. It's better for it's still be responsible for endangerment, but it's
scary. Yeah, so I'm reading C and D, and if you take out all of the protected classes in D, there's very little that separates the two clauses. And so I would almost say, because C is essentially the definition of a hostile environment that criminal Title IX uses, if you look to say, it's like literally the same thing. So therefore, I almost think it would make more sense. We just keep C, but we take all the protected classes in D and put them exactly into the values, right? Enhancement being penalties. Solve both issues. And then you have all those values enhancement, they go to the other provisions as well. So it would make sense in my head that just happens, because then you basically get rid of D, makes sense. And then if you stalk someone based off of that, you use the values to enhance that penalty again. So I think that, and then I just say you solve a plus physically injured to another person, period. And then this is a correct class, again, you go back to the value statement. But that would be like, it's a functional organization thing as well. I haven't seen like what the version looks like, so I would say like how it looks together. I would almost say like here's the violation, but then you basically okay, I prove for asking how do I prove the next part? Yeah.
This is different from what happened before. Where you have less than one.
Well, it doesn't include the footnotes.
Yeah.
So, I was reading in the draft in the box, but D says to engage in discriminatory, hostile environment, harassment, directly against any person or group of persons based on protected status.
Protected status is a defining term to try and make face less critical of it.
So, I assume you want to then propose to the UA. Do you want to propose it, or do you want to propose it as a way to?
Yeah. This is the substance of whether it's a promoter, but the defined term is when it goes to the UA, this is an informal discussion.
I think it's fine.
Yeah. We can absolutely ban that. The reason it's spelled out here is because you share protected status as a capital term and being defined to people. I guess to Joe's point, though, I think it's the philosophical point of view, you're absolutely right. From a functional equivalency point of view, assaulting someone is bad, you can use the enhancement to the penalty, but I think there's also a signaling aspect of you say it is bad to assault someone, it is also adding a separate offense could be seen as an escalation as well as an individual. You're also, in terms of disciplinary record being sent out, listing an offense, but list in this case that it was you were found responsible for police that based on the basis of bias, discard, right assault, and people may assign value to that in terms of more signaling function of. If we're expelling someone because they want to meet people on the basis of their status, that might be relevant to other people who might not get a discretionary error. You are expelled for yourself.
But that doesn't make sense. That you could be harassing them. Theoretically, you try to see it, even in reality, it's really just right. But like, I think, and practically, it just doesn't make sense. Why harass one way and not start stalking? Like, you don't have that under stalking, but you could have that, like, under harassment. So again, I get confused, I think, and I think we're trying to, this is a content plus an organizational point. If you pick and choose, like, if you essentially are giving each one a second one, like class, like, it gets confusing. I think if I want to easily read this, I say, here are, like, big, bad things that you can do broadly. And then if it's because of a class, that's another part. And I guess this leads to the question, like, if you, this values enhancement thing, penalties, do you want to change? Do you want to move that away from the penalties or put it in violations? Or do you want to, because you could theoretically do violations instead of having category, or you could. So that's, I guess, how I'm thinking of it. Like,
so just a quick question. What's an unprotected status?
I'm wearing a blue shirt. Yes, it could be, and also it could be age under 45. That's a critical one for department. This is any characteristic that's like, oh, I don't like a Mac or an iPhone. It's any characteristic that is not otherwise regular, women, sex, ethnicity, gender. Those are all fully protected, but it's perfectly legal to discriminate on the basis of things that aren't considered, aren't prohibited or opinions, such as, oh, sorry, I don't like your denim jacket, I'm not gonna do X.
So, in terms of stigmatism, and I totally understand the questions people are raising here, one of the differences between the language is that response to harass, and D is specifically a environment, and of course that's a form of harassment, so it could still come under C. But the reason that the working group worked so hard on those issues was because it really was in response to the reality that people were experiencing in that particular way of hostile environment, and particularly the discriminatory hostile environment. So, they could find, and maybe there are ways to combine them in ways that right in that section, way that came around with the footnote that we could make it clear that's right there. But that's the deal.
It, this is right. Sometimes I'm more philosophical. So the question really has to do with this boundary, the affected status, and how you arrive at it. So I can imagine discrimination against Detroiters, or against a basketball team coming from Detroit, or whatever it might be. It's just protected statuses are assigned categories that do not rest on any ultimately fundamental distinction. That's fine with me as long as we're recognizing it. And then it makes Joe's point a good one. I mean, you're basically dividing classes of actions rather than some kind of deeper notion.
The reason, I mean, this is against the background of why we have a discrimination office. Plenty of people make that a discrimination office. The fact that it's these are discrete areas of action as opposed to broader protection. But the understanding of that status that comes out of it is actually that comes out of being subject to being treated as subject historically. Discrimination, so the law needs to provide additional protection. And that's the reason. There is actually a reason behind it. It's not a commentary on the statement about protected status. And so we just pick something. There's actually a reason on the base that then leads to the defining certain reasons. So that's where it comes from. And so in my view, having C and D respond both to these laws down to discrimination and a commitment by the university to say, and we also think that there's certain behaviors that make it harassment that aren't because of protected status, but are still conditions in which people should not have to do it. So that's how I see it.
I see the part of both sides. I think that you might be able to, if you're trying to streamline a little bit, move D into a sub of C as converge some language, because if D is a subset of C, there is all discrimination, harassment, or harassment, this harassment, but not all harassment. You might can do that to streamline a little bit, but I think the reason point that there's value to A, where this came out of, and having that listed as a almost a stronger issue than just garden variety harassment. And I think that's something we can do to try to balance the concern still. And it's trying to be economical with language without just keeping it all away. And the other thing, the reason I touched on this, is the code in its definition of protected as invidious categories, in about, I want to say, a clear number, I think 20 for the most, they have political persuasion, especially because of free speech and the like, can't discriminate on the basis of political persuasion. This draft language, in terms of removing defining terms, which I think would make that a little bit easier, we have to reconcile what's what. So I will just say that I know that the markups I've brought before, and that's what we have to decide is okay. Have it listed in which other places that political persuasion is one of them. The other places we don't. And that could have just been a drafting times, which actually I think a lot of it, because different rate of status on the code is frankly, you can tell when students are drafted based on what's expected and what's not. Most updated version being that we're editing right now. So we're going to have to harmonize that. The argument for race working group was if we're going to harmonize, you might add to the persuasion, just say, here's a list of paid statuses, this plus code persuasion applies to the code. We are all set in that regard, but yes.
There is a distinction too between freedom of speech, political belief, freedom of speech includes everything besides. So it's a
that is currently in the term political persuasion, being mentioned in terms of defining what graph is, anywhere you pick that is less, we're going to replace it.
Because right now, the graph is when they change things, people forgot to say things, for definition, in one place, and then you have a call, you have to write off. That convention, you'll put these here in the hearing board and say, we'll agree with graph the right next time. It should have been there, or it's now there now, what do we do?
We are about to lose quorum. Are there any other major comments that you believe this should be sent to you that is not in the book? We just want to be able to start discussing language. This is the legal side of other than your. A clear document that shows what
I have a final question. So in the review that Matt thing of changes and discussions with the central administration. Is there any discussion about the fraternities and sororities of the code?
That is a great question.
I can answer that question. So I'm currently on a committee examining the judicial process of Greek life. That committee is working under student campus life, and there we haven't come up with, we're currently working through the semester on long-term solutions for that to say if it is. If I can be honestly, as my experience only as a committee member, not even appointed to you, right? Just through a bunch of others that I have to represent. It seems as though there is a hesitancy from the committee itself to provide a recommendation that depends on the campus code of conduct because the committee isn't convinced that where the campus code of conduct is will match a way that they see Greek life under it. So there's a concern of that until they see a campus code of conduct that's kind of finalized. They don't make that decision from their end. And I think that one would be given more weight by administrative, like that group's recommendation will be given more weight by administrators. They're going, but like the system that's being proposed is like not eerily similar to what is already doing in the OJA. It's just a more student-centric judicial process model, so that because that's how Greek life is always operating, the students and they're involved in the process, and so that's differentiated between the two. But I don't, from my perspective, it just doesn't seem like there are many people on the committee, both who are staff members and students and alumni who aren't ready to take that dive yet.
With that, I would like to have I don't know if I had it. I mean, thank you, Joe. We heard from Mary McGrath, former administrator in December of the UA. I remember talking, I talked to the administration about it. Again,